the former Attorney General of the state of Indiana, Curtis Hill. Curtis, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining us today. Can you just explain to people, I've gone over this before, but can you explain to people what happened and why you and Jamie Rittenour were not on that stage last night to make that debate more enjoyable and more pleasant to watch?
Well, I appreciate that. I can't explain it fully because it's not explainable to me. I think we should have been there. We should have been, we qualified for the ballot. According to Fox 59's information, there are over 43% undecided in this race. So it's imperative that everyone get an opportunity. But we were told that from the poll that they conducted themselves, 59, that we didn't qualify for their debate. That's not consistent with the information that we have around the state from our sources in terms of our popularity, what's going on at the grassroots level. But it was their debate stage. They got to pick. And I think as a result, it ended up being a pretty flat program.
So you just received the endorsement of Hoosier Conservative Voices. That just happened. You've won a couple of polls on which candidate would win. And again, not a statewide poll, but, you know, there's been some polls that have shown that you're the preferred candidate from some locales in the state. So it would seem that you should be on that stage. You're obviously the former attorney general. You're probably maybe other than Mike Braun, the person with the most name recognition up there. Do you think that part of this has to do with establishment Republicans' personal vendetta against you?
I think it's a matter of money. Money talks. We have lots of people in this race that are millionaires, multimillionaires. I think it's a matter of the establishment wanting to keep conservative voices out of the process. I have the strongest conservative voice. I have the strongest conservative base. And I think that the folks in Indianapolis are really, really worried about that. They're worried that we'll catch fire and make some things happen. And quite frankly, Casey, that's exactly what's happening.
All right. So again, we're talking with Curtis Hill, Republican gubernatorial candidate, state of Indiana. So Curtis, I guess I'll ask you one of the questions that they asked the other candidates on stage last night. Grade Eric Holcomb's tenure as governor of the state of Indiana.
Well, that's easy. At best, a D, and I can certainly justify an F. And the primary basis of my grade is 2020. His handling of the pandemic in 2020, 2021, sinks any other positive accomplishments that he may have had as governor because of its detrimental impact on all Hoosiers. And it's crazy to me, the grades that I saw or didn't see last night were phenomenal. The lieutenant governor, Suzanne, says A or C for an average of B. That's interesting because she's his partner. Whatever he does, she's tied to it. Pretty incredible. It was interesting that Brad Chambers came out with a very meek A, and that shows his connection to Holcomb as the Secretary of Commerce, so that's not too surprising either. What was really surprising, I think, was that Doden didn't give him a grade at all. I found that interesting, but clearly we get failed marks for Holcomb, 23 months of emergency orders that shut down businesses, shut down churches, shut down schools. We've got children that still are reeling through the aftermath of the impact of those shutdowns. That in and of itself is a failing grade.
Now, speaking of that, I mean, we got a $1 billion Medicaid shortfall in part because of the big push to grow the, we'll call it the health complex, if you will, in the state of Indiana. And, you know, everybody's kind of asked about that, and they all said, yeah, we'd support an audit, sure, whatever. But at the same time, nobody had any really solid answers to how we got to a $1 billion Medicaid shortfall. Do you have any answers for that? And what would you do as governor?
Well, I can't say how we got there because I wasn't inside government when it happened. That's a question that was put to Suzanne, and I don't think she answered it adequately. I think what we do going forward is we take $1 billion out of our surplus and we put it back in the kitty. This idea of pretending that we have an extra $1 billion of surplus that we really don't have should be the answer rather than putting this on the backs of children and families that are participating in a program to provide them with aid and services.
So when we talked about when they talked about helping small towns or the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, of course, the IEDC is extremely important to ginning up economic development in the state of Indiana. Indiana is, in the Midwest, the fastest growing state. A lot of people moving to Indiana are coming from blue states. And there does appear to be a push from Chambers, who was the head of the IEDC at the time, to bring big business here. We saw him spar with Braun over that. Doden is out there saying we need to go ahead and make this about, you know, every county. But, you know, what is the right course for economic development in Indiana? I've been very critical that Republicans and Democrats seem very invested in green energy projects to kind of lure Silicon Valley here. And I'm worried about a cultural shift in the state away from red to blue. What do you think about economic development in the state, and what direction would you take us?
Well, you're exactly right to concern yourself with the value system, because if we're trying to create a Silicon Valley type technical community, then you're going to get the values that come with Silicon Valley, and that's going to disrupt who we are as Hoosiers. Economic growth is an important avenue of our future. We definitely want to continue to grow, but we need to grow our way. We need to make sure that when companies are looking at Indiana, they come to Indiana based on our value system, and that we don't change our values to match them. This is what's happening with most of the projects at the Economic Development Corporation now. They're big money projects, big numbers projects, and the expectation is we bring this big group into Indiana. Indiana's going to have to change. People won't want to come to Indiana unless you have a social agenda. That's not what I'm about. I think we need to have a balanced approach. The state of Indiana should not be directing or leading in that effort. We should be providing assistance to local communities, providing them with some infrastructure assistance, communications information. A perfect example of what not to do is the LEAP project down in Boone County, where the state has directly engaged in the process and has become the developer, investing billions of dollars into one county and at the expense of others. And one of the questions that I raised was, if the LEAP project is such a wonderful project, why not take it to a depressed area like Gary, Indiana, or Marion, Indiana, someplace where they're still reeling from having lost industry over the last couple of decades, if you really want to shoot some energy back? No, what do? They take it to a county that's the fastest growing county in the state, with close proximity to Indianapolis, low-hanging fruit to create a new industry. I just don't think it makes any sense.
I want to read you a quote. And again, we're talking with Curtis Hill, former Attorney General for the state of Indiana, current GOP gubernatorial candidate. I support, when asked about Black Lives Matter, Senator Mike Braun said, "I support that movement because it's addressing an inequity that has not been solved. How many more George Floyds need to happen before you actually fix it? The point they're making is 100% justified." Last night on stage, Senator Braun lied about that statement and basically accused anybody who brings that statement up of misrepresenting what he said on this podcast, which is on an urban music station, which currently has an episode of that podcast addressing black communist women black women in the communist movement in the 1960s. What's your response to that? Because you actually called him out on this not that long ago in the Daily Caller News Foundation article that was back in February, asking for clarity on what he meant by that.
Well, you're exactly right. He's trying to mislead the public into thinking that he's being accused of having said something that he didn't say. He said it very, very clearly. One thing that no governor candidate or governor should be in a position to be doing is supporting a Marxist organization like Black Lives Matter that's anti-Semitic, anti-family, anti-police. It's a racist organization. There's nothing good that comes from it. His making that comment either demonstrates a raw ignorance, or I guess a desire to march with Black Lives Matter. That type of sentiment doesn't belong in our society whatsoever. So I'm very concerned, not only that he made the statements in the first place, but his brazen ability to sort of sidestep it and run away from it as if the rest of us are smoking dope and didn't hear what he had to say. We know exactly what you said, Mike. It is what it is. Just own up to it.
All right, we're talking again with the former Attorney General of the state of Indiana, Republican gubernatorial candidate, Curtis Hill. Curtis, you got time to hang on with us, correct? We got to do a little commercial break.
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold. We'll come back with Curtis Hill in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to The Burning Truth. And good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to The Burning Truth. I'm your host, Casey Hendrickson, all throughout northern Indiana. Joining us on the line right now is the former Attorney General of Indiana. Curtis Hill, running for governor of the state as a Republican, was not on the stage last night because of old polling data that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. And Curtis, once again, thank you for the time. We do appreciate it. And I wanted to ask you about the deportation thing, because one of the things when I was playing the sound bites from the debate last night, you know, it was a pretty simple question. You know, if Trump is reelected, he's promised to issue an executive order calling for the deportation of illegal immigrants throughout the United States. Would you comply with that order? And not a single candidate up there would answer that question. How would you respond if a President Trump issued an executive order to deport illegal immigrants in the state of Indiana?
Well, we absolutely would cooperate. I mean, if we're going to do anything about the border, number one is we need to provide security at the border. Indiana needs to do its part with providing National Guardsmen. As you know, I made a call out to Eric Holcomb to send the National Guard
you did.
to the state of Texas, and 2 days later he did so. So I think that's the first step. The second step is not to provide a safe haven in our state for illegals. One of the problems that we have is that the federal government does not deport anyone. They don't take that action. So if the president issues an order requiring deportation, the state will cooperate. Now, we want to make sure that the state, that the federal government provides the resources, additional resources. One thing that we have to be concerned about is it's not the state's responsibility to deport, and we don't have the resources. We have barely sufficient resources to handle protecting the public from ordinary criminals as it is. So we want to make sure that the federal government provides resources and also follows through on their promise to actually see the deportations through. But we would absolutely cooperate with that.
So we've also had, between you and Suzanne Crouch, has been an argument back and forth about the income tax in the state of Indiana. She's running on eliminating the income tax, phasing it out over a period of time. You have argued that we should not do that. Plead your case.
Well, here's the thing. She says axe the tax as though she has found $8 billion in savings. And if she's found $8 billion in savings, I would remind her that she is the current lieutenant governor. Give us our money back now. Why do we have to be held hostage for her to become governor and then we suddenly get this $8 billion windfall? So, Casey, what it is, it's a gimmick. It's a gimmick like the red glasses, and people are tired of it. We don't need gimmicks. We need policy. We need to be able to evaluate what it is we want our government to do, identify what it's going to take to run that project of government, and then a fair system in which to develop our revenues. From the folks who I've talked to across the state, there's a bigger issue with regard to property tax than income tax. Now, the bottom line is nobody likes paying taxes, but we like the services that we get. Police protection, fire protection, water, sewers, infrastructure, those things cost money. So we have to have resources in which to provide our folks with the necessities of life that we've become accustomed to. So we need to provide a fair and consistent tax program that makes sense to everybody, that's fair to everyone. And Suzanne is just barking up the wrong tree with a gimmick of axe the tax.
So when Indiana has, as it currently has right now, its total tax burden per citizen is number 18 in the nation. Our gas tax burden is number 4 in the nation. Do you see an opportunity to reduce the tax burden for Hoosiers at all? Or is that something that you would need to study a little bit more?
No. Immediately we can do that. Mike Braun's gas tax is on the chopping block. The gas tax that was put in place in 2017, authored by Mike Braun, was the largest tax increase in the history of the state, from what I understand.
And will go up again in April.
It keeps going up. And the objective apparently was to generate $1.2 billion of revenue. Well, it's up to $1.6 billion now. So it's one of these taxes that just keeps on giving, or I should say, keeps on taking away. It's time for us to, particularly given the economic times that we're in now, to give Hoosiers a break. We can very easily roll back the gas tax, the bond gas tax, back to 2017 levels. We'd say 16 cents per gallon at the pump every time you go to the pump, 16 cents per gallon. And we would still end up with $1.4 billion in revenue for road projects. It's a no-brainer. It's something that we can do today to provide immediate relief without a great deal of fanfare.
All All right, Curtis, we're down to the last 30 seconds. Go ahead and tell everybody about your campaign website and how they can support your campaign.
We're at CurtisHill.com. CurtisHill.com. We're running a grassroots operation. We want people to contact us and let us know what you think. Give us suggestions. We do take donations. We need them with these millionaires that we're letting get. So any sort of support that someone wants to provide us, we're absolutely rock solid with that.
Curtis, thank you so much. We do appreciate the time today. We appreciate it again. We'll talk to you later.
Podcasts by Federated Media.